Jewish Game of Conquest, Part 8. Today we're going to be discussing the city of Be'er Sheva. So if you look at your map, the city of Be'er Sheva is located in the south, in the area of the Holy Land that's known as the Negev. Negev means south, actually literally means dry, because like in the south is mostly a desert, arid area, so it's called Negev, means dry, which also means south. So Be'er Sheva is located over here in that southern area of the Holy Land. We're going to discuss different things about the city of Be'er Sheva. There is a theory that came up with that was proposed by someone named Rabbi Yaakov Moshe, the grandson of the Vilna Gaon. He wrote a book called Masos Yisrael, and he writes a theory that the city Kadesh Barnea, which is one of the stops that the Jewish people had in the desert, is the same as the city of Be'er Sheva. This theory is not quite accepted, but it's a somewhat out there theory, but it is an interesting theory about the city of Be'er Sheva. Be'er Sheva is a prominent city. It's located in the territory of Yehuda. We even find that one of the queens of the kings of Yehuda was from the city of Be'er Sheva. It says in the Bible, it says that Yoash, the king of Yehuda, his mother was named Tzivia from Be'er Sheva. So she's from the city of Be'er Sheva. So you see that Be'er Sheva produced, you know, noble people, important people. So it was an important city. So let's start with where is the city of Be'er Sheva first mentioned in the Bible. The city of Be'er Sheva first comes up in Genesis, also with Avraham Avinu. And basically what happens is that after the story with the destruction of Sodom and Lot running away from Sodom and doing what he did in the cave with his two daughters, so Avraham Avinu sort of felt embarrassed to be associated with his nephew Lot. So what he did was he left where he was living in Hebron, which is not so far from where this whole thing happened, and he moved elsewhere to a different land, to what's known as the Philistine land of Gror. So this is Philistine territory, and he's going to the kingdom of Gror. This is in Genesis chapter 20. Avram traveled from there, Arza HaNegev, to the land of the south. And he settled between Kadesh and Shur. He settled specifically in the kingdom of Gror. And again, Avraham Avinu, in this place of Gror, does the same shtick that he did in Egypt. And he tells his wife, Sarah, to say that really she's his sister. And the king Avimelech of Gror takes her, abducts her, and he gets punished because he took the wife of the prophet. And then he ends up giving her back. And he gives Avraham Avinu all kinds of gifts. And not long after that, it says that Sarah gives birth to Yitzchak. Right? Sarah gives birth to Yitzchak while Avram and Sarah were living in the land of Gror, in this land in the Philistine territory led by the king Avimelech. Afterwards, there's a whole story over there of what happens is that Sarah sees Avraham Avinu's son Yishmael playing in an inappropriate way with her son Yitzchak. He was playing with bows and arrows, and he was threatening to kill him and things like that. So she wanted to get rid of him. And after consulting with Hashem, basically Avraham Avinu decides he's going to send off Yishmael and his mother Hagar, and he sends them off. And it says over there that he sent her. This is in Genesis 20, verse 14. It says, "Vatelach vateisa." She went and she strayed, b'midbar Be'er Sheva, in the desert of Be'er Sheva. See, this is the first mention of the city of Be'er Sheva in the Bible. This is when Avraham Avinu sends away Hagar and Yishmael, so he sends them off to the desert of Be'er Sheva, and she famously, the child is very sick over there, and she famously hears an angel tell her that don't worry, her child is going to be saved, and he's going to become a great nation as well. Right? So that happened over there in the desert of Beersheba, in the desert around the area of Beersheba. You can more or less look at Beersheba as sort of an oasis within that big desert. And then the Bible tells us, why is this area called Beersheba? It tells us a story. This is also in Genesis 21, verse 22. It was in that time, and Avimelech and his general said to Abraham, God is with you in everything that you do, and now you should swear to us in the name of God that you won't lie to us or to our descendants, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, and you will do like the kindness that we are doing to you, so you will do to us and with all the people that live over here. And Abraham agreed. He said, okay, I will take that oath. And what happened is that Abraham had actually dug multiple wells. And he dug all these wells. And what happened was that the servants of Avimelech, of the king of Gerar, had stuffed up the wells. And they actually stole the waters of the wells. And so Abraham at this juncture criticizes or castigates Avimelech for his part in this. And Avimelech says, you know, I didn't know anything about this. You're just telling me about this now. I didn't hear anything about this before. And okay, fine. So Avram and Avimelech are making this deal together that they're going to make a deal between themselves and their descendants, between themselves and each other and their descendants as well, that they're going to do kind to each other and they're not going to act with ill will towards each other. And so it says, "Vayikach Avram tzoynu vokor, vayiten l'Avimelech, vayichusu shneim bris." Avram took flock and cattle, and he gave it to Avimelech, and they cut a treaty between them. Vayatev Avram as sheva kivsos atzin levadhen. Avram left seven lambs by themselves. No, actually, they're female lambs which are ewes. Vayim Avimelech Avram. Avimelech said to Avram, "What are the seven ewes that you left separately from the other animals?" And he said that you should take these special seven ewes as testimony to the fact that I dug these wells and they really belong to me. And it says, Al Kain Kara, this is verse 31, Al Kain Kara Lamakai Mahu Be'er Shava. Therefore the name of the place is Be'er Shava. Why? Kisham Nishba'u Shnehem. Because there both of them had taken an oath. So the understanding over here is that the word Be'er means well, and Shava means an oath. Right? Vayishava means he took an oath. It's a verb of taking an oath. So it's, why is the city called Be'er Shava, the well of the oath? Because that was the place where Abraham and Avimelech made a treaty, and they took an oath to affirm that treaty that they made between the two peoples. So that's why it's called Be'er Shava. Continuing on in the verse, it says in 21:32, it says, Be'er Shava. It repeats, it says, they entered into a covenant in Be'er Shava. And then Avimelech and his general went back to the land of the Philistines. Vayita Eshel Be'er Shava. And Abraham planted an Eshel in Be'er Shava. What's an Eshel? We'll explain in a moment. Vayikrasham, and he called there B'Shem Hashem Kel Olam, in the name of God, the God of the universe, meaning Avraham Avinu used that now as a base to spread the ideas of monotheism. He called out in the name of God, meaning he called out to other people and preached to the masses, right? So he planted this Eshel, which will explain what an Eshel is, and he called out to the name of God. Vayogar Avram be'eretz Plishim, and Avram lived or settled in the land of the Plishim in the Philistines, Yomim Rabim, many days, which we interpret to mean many years. Many years he lived there. So there's a few different things over here. First of all, it says that he lived here many, many years or many days, right? So if you make a calculation, I don't want to get exactly into the details of the calculation, but it comes out that Avraham Avinu lived in the city of Hebron for 25 years. And by Avraham living in Hebron, it doesn't say anything about him living there for many years. It just says that, you know, he lived in Hebron. It doesn't say anything, it doesn't stress this point of many years. When it says that he lived in Be'er Shava, it makes a point of saying he lived there for many years. So from that, the rabbis understand that he lived in Be'er Shava for longer than he lived in Hebron. So he lived in Haran for 25 years. So according to tradition, he lived in Be'er Sheva for 26 years. So he lived in Be'er Sheva longer than he lived in Haran. You know, Haran is historically, you know, more associated with Avram Avinu than Be'er Sheva might be. But that's because later on in his life, Avram Avinu is going to move back to Haran. He's going to end up dying there, and that's where he's going to be buried. So he's going to live again in Haran in his later years. But here, at this point, he lives in Be'er Sheva. You know, we said that Yitzchak was born while he was living in the Philistine land. He sent off Yishmael while he was living in the Philistine land. All these stories happened in the same era when Avinu was living in the land of Be'er Sheva. It says he planted an eshel. So what is an eshel? So there's two opinions in rabbinic interpretation as to what an eshel is. Either an eshel is a type of a tree, and he used that tree to give shade to people or something like that. There's also another layer to this thing of him, of Avram Avinu planting a tree, which we'll get to in a few minutes. The other interpretation is that eshel is not actually a word, but should be interpreted as an acronym for basically what we would call in modern days a hotel or a motel. Eshel would be as Aleph Shin Lamed, which is interpreted as an acronym for Aleph is Achila, Shin is Shtia, Lamed is Lina. Achila, Shtia, Lina. Achila means eating, Shtia is drinking, and Lina is lodging. Right? So Avraham Avinu built a hotel. He planted an eshel, means he built a hotel. He made a place that people can stop, a pit stop, a rest stop, right? On the road, I guess maybe on the side of the road or something like that, that people can eat, drink, and sleep there. That's the eshel that Avraham Avinu built. So either this eshel is referring to an actual tree, or the eshel is referring to more or less what we would call a hotel or a motel. What's the difference between a hotel and a motel?
Quality.
One spelled with an H, one spelled with an M, no? The quality, the hotel is supposed to be higher quality, no? It's like Motel 6. They leave a light on for you, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the story of Avraham Avinu. As I mentioned before, Avraham Avinu, the next story in the Bible is when Avraham Avinu is charged with slaughtering his son Yitzchak with Akedas, which he ends up only binding him. It's called the binding of Yitzchak, the Akedas Yitzchak. That's in Genesis chapter 22. And at the end of that story, it says that Avraham Avinu lived in Be'er Sheva. But then in Genesis 23, the very next story, it seems that they were already living in Hebron. So there's different ways to interpret it. What exactly happened? Was Avram living in Be'er Sheva? Was he living in Haran? But it seems that towards the end of this point, when his wife Sarah dies, it says that she died in Kiryas Arba, which is Haran. So it seems that Avram Avinu and his family were already living in Haran. Some say that he was living in Be'er Sheva, but she was looking for him and she couldn't find him because he was off by Har Moriah, and she went to Haran to look for him, and that's where she died. But it seems to be that at this point, Avraham Avinu's family was living really in Hebron, not in Be'er Sheva, at the time of the Akedas Yitzchak. And they were living in Hebron, and of course, okay, there's Genesis 23 goes through the story of, you know, Avraham Avinu buying a plot of land to bury her in Hebron, and then Avraham Avinu, Genesis 24, is finding a match for Yitzchak to get married. And in Genesis 25, okay, whatever. In Genesis 26, we're focusing really on the lifetime of Yitzchak now. Now we're focusing on the lifetime of Yitzchak. Right? Avraham Avinu is already dead. Yitzchak is already married and he has two kids. Right? When Yitzchak's kids were 15 years old, that's when Avraham Avinu died. There's a simple way of calculating that. But that's the understanding. Avraham Avinu passed away at the age of 175. Right? So now, what happens is that Yitzchak is living in Hebron, and what happens is, in the beginning of chapter 26, that there's a famine in the Holy Land. Besides the original famine that prompted Abraham to move from the Holy Land to Egypt, way back when he first came to the Holy Land, this is a new famine that happened in the time of Yitzchak. And because of this famine, Yitzchak decided to relocate. And see, there's this idea that because of the story of Akedas Yitzchak, where Yitzchak was supposed to be brought as a sacrifice, so Yitzchak was sort of consecrated as sort of an especially holy person, and therefore the halacha is that an animal which is consecrated to be a korban is not allowed to be taken out of the holy place. And so this person who was in a conceptual way supposed to be a sacrifice as well, he's not allowed to leave the holy place either. So Yitzchak, the idea is he never leaves the Holy Land. Through his entire life, he always stayed in the Holy Land. But at this point, he relocated from Hebron to Gror. Now, Gror is, if you want to imagine Gror, it's, you know, in Be'er Sheva is like in the territory of Gror. It's in the southern and the western area. So it's like this area. It's still in the Holy Land. Like you know, a little bit like the Gaza Strip, a little bit north of that, a little bit west, east of that. That's this area. In the time of Yitzchak. So Yitzchak never leaves the Holy Land. So instead of relocating to Egypt, Yitzchak relocates to the land of Gror, to this place where Avimelech was the king of the Philistines in the kingdom of Gror. And he goes there, and God appears to him when he's in Gror, and God tells him, do not go down to Egypt. You should live in the land that I told you, the Asher Amar Elacha, in the land that I'm going to tell you to live in. Gur Ba'aretz Hazayis, live in this land. V'heyei Mucho V'avarachecha, and I'll be with you, and it will bless you. Kilchol Azaracha Tenez Kol Aretz Yisrael, because to you and to your descendants I'll give this land. V'akimeisi Yisrael Shvua, Asher Nishbati La'Avraham Avicha, and I will uphold the promise or the oath that is sworn to Abraham, your father. So Yitzchak stays in the land of Gror. He does not go to Egypt because God told him, don't go to Egypt. So Yitzchak is living in this land, Gror, and again, the similar story happens where he tells his wife, Rivka, you know, say that you're my sister, don't say that you're my wife, because I don't want them to kill me and then try to marry you. And so he starts telling people that she's his sister, and then he gets caught having relations with her, and then people are like, wait, I thought she's your sister. And it's like, no, I only said that she's my sister because I didn't want you to kill me over her. And then, you know, Avimelech, you know, reacts sort of very upset. And he's like, why are you doing this to us? You know, one of the important people of my kingdom almost laid with her because you seem to pass her off as an unmarried woman. So, like, why are you doing this? So then Avimelech says, you know, nobody's allowed to touch this man and his wife. You know, this guy is an untouchable. Be careful with him. Don't try not to deal too much with him or whatever. Right? He's somewhat actually ostracized. And so what happens is that, we're going to see that what happens, he's sort of ostracized. It says Yitzchak planted a lot of things in that land, and he had a special blessing, and he reaped a hundredfold what he was expecting to reap from what he had, whatever it was that he had planted, and so he became very successful in terms of his agriculture and in terms of his flock. It was very successful, and what happened was that all the wells that his father Avram Avinu had dug. So the Philistines came and they stuffed the wells. They weren't usable, and so there's a whole fight between Yitzchak and Yitzchak's men and Avimelech's men, and they were digging wells and fighting over wells. And there's a whole bunch of wells that were built over here. Yitzchak tries to redig all these wells that the Philistines built, that the Philistines had stuffed up, that Avram Avinu had originally built. So it says that. It says that they built a well. You know, they built one well, and they found, you know, they found, what's it called? They dug in the valley, and they found spring water. And, you know, they built a well there. And then it says they fought, the shepherds of Gror fought with the shepherds of Yitzchak, saying, no, really, the water should belong to us. And they called that well, they called it Asek, because Asek means to fight. And then they dug another well, and they fought about that, and they called that Sitna. Sitna means like hatred, right? So that's another well. And then they dug again, and he made another well, and they didn't fight about that, and he called that well Rehovot. It is a modern day city in Israel called Rehovot, Rehovis. And he said, why is it called Rehovot? Because Rachav means wide. So it says Kata Hirchiv Hashem Lanu Forinu Ares. Hashem has granted us ample space, and he allowed us to be fruitful in the land. And then he went to Be'er Sheva. And when Yitzchak was in Be'er Sheva, he had a special vision from God, and God reaffirmed his commitment that he's gonna bless Yitzchak and his descendants, and they're gonna have a lot of descendants. And at that place, Yitzchak builds an altar, and he calls that in the name of Hashem. and they were going to build another. They were, and Yitzhak's men were looking to build another well over there. And all of a sudden, Avimelech, the king of Gerar, comes with his men and a group of his soldiers, and he says to, and Yitzhak says to them, "What are you guys doing here? What did you come? I thought you hate me. You ostracized me. You sent me away from you. You're ruining all of my wells. What do you want from me?" And they said, "No, what happened is we see that God is with you, and we want to make a deal between you and us, that we should be peace between us, and we're only going to do good to you, and you'll only do good to us, and we'll affirm this deal between us and you and I, and my descendants and your descendants." And so that's what happens. It says, "Vayas lahem mishta." They made a party. Vayayu vayishtu. They ate and they drank. Vayishkimu vabayker. They woke up in the morning. Vayishavu ish l'achiv. Each man swore to his fellow, meaning Yitzchak and Avimelech swore to each other, and they sent Yitzchak off in peace. And then on that day, the servants of Yitzchak found more spring water, and they built another well, and it says they called it Shiva. Therefore, the name of the city is Be'er Sheva Ad HaYom Hazeh. Until this very day, that's the name of the city, Be'er Sheva. And that's the story in Genesis 26 of Yitzchak having a similar story as his father had with Avimelech, the king of Gerar. Right? In both stories, Yitzchak and Avram both sort of have a somewhat contentious relationship with Avimelech, the king of Gerar, and then they make a deal together, and they affirm their commitment to each other and their descendants, which actually is going to come back to haunt them when we discuss the city of Yerushalayim. We'll see how this deal that they made with the Philistines comes back to haunt the Jewish people as a whole. But they made this deal, and because they made this deal, the name of the place, the name of that site, is Be'er Sheva. Right? Now, this is somewhat problematic, because we said by Avram Avinu, if we look carefully, let's look at it carefully, this in Genesis, we already read this verse, but we'll read it again. Genesis 20, 21, verse 31, says, by Avram Avinu, says, "Al kein karal amakim ahu Be'er Sheva." Therefore, he called the name of the place Be'er Sheva, kisham nishbu shneihem, because they had both sworn there. Right? And when it comes to Yitzchak, this is in 26:33. It says, "Vayikra Yisrael Sheva." He called it Sheva. "Al kein shemu ir Be'er Sheva." Therefore, the name of the city is Be'er Sheva Ad HaYom Hazeh, until this day. So it's somewhat of a contradiction. Why is the city named Be'er Sheva? Is it because of the deal that Avram Avinu made with Avimelech? Or is the name of the city Be'er Sheva because of the deal that Yitzchak Avinu made with Avimelech? Somewhat of a contradiction. In Genesis 21, it sounds like it's because of Avram Avinu. In Genesis 26, it sounds like it's because of Yitzchak Avinu. So which one is correct? What do you say, Justin? There's something to it. What do you say, David? Aha, very interesting. Okay, so I looked in the commentaries, and I found a lot of different commentaries that address this issue. But there's basically five approaches to dealing with this issue. The first approach is proposed by the Ibn Ezra, Rabbi Avram Ibn Ezra, lived in Spain in the 1100s. He writes that there were two cities named Be'er Sheva. There was one named after the Be'er Sheva, the deal by Avram Avinu, and there was one Be'er Sheva named after the deal that happened by Yitzchak Avinu, right? The new deal, right? So that's how he answers it. There's two Be'er Shevas. There's a commentary from the grandson of Rashi. His name is Rashbam. And Rashbam wants to say that I have proof that there were two Be'er Shevas. And he says, what's the proof? Because in the book of Kings, Kings 1, chapter 19, verse 3, so it's talking about Eliyahu Anavi, Elijah the prophet, running away from the queen of the kingdom of Israel. Her name was Jezebel. She wanted to promote Baal worship in the kingdom of Israel, and Eliyahu Anavi was zealous for the honor of God, and so he was trying to stop Baal worship, so she decided she's going to go kill him. So it says that Eliyahu Anavi ran away. It says that he went, where did he go? He went to Be'er Sheva, Asher Li Yehuda. He went to Be'er Sheva, which belongs to Yehuda, which belongs to the tribal territory of Yehuda. which would suggest that there's another city, Be'er Sheva, which does not belong to Yehuda, which is in the tribal territory of Yehuda. Right? That's what the Rashbam says. So you see that there's two Be'er Shevas. Now, I mean, this proof is not, you know, it's not 100% foolproof, this text, the proof text. Because the way you could read it, and that's the way most commentaries in Genesis, in Kings read it, is that he ran to the city of Be'er Sheva, which is in Yehuda, meaning not necessarily in the tribal territory of Yehuda, but read it as which is in the kingdom of Yehuda, meaning he had escaped the wrath of the queen of the kingdom of Israel by going into the kingdom of Yehuda. It's beyond her territory, and she couldn't have any influence over him there. So he got it to a safe place. So it doesn't mean that, it doesn't mean to say Asher li Yehud means Be'er Sheva, which belongs to Yehuda. It doesn't mean Be'er Sheva, which belongs to Yehuda, with the implication that, and there's another Be'er Sheva, which doesn't belong to Yehuda, so I have to say which belongs to Yehuda to tell you which one I'm talking about. Rather, what it means is Be'er Sheva, Asher li Yehuda, he went to Be'er Sheva, which belongs to Yehuda, as opposed to staying in the territory of the kingdom of Israel, he went to Be'er Sheva, which is in the kingdom of Yehuda. That's the simplest way of understanding it. There is another piece of evidence to this idea that there's two Be'er Shevas. In the book of Joshua, there's somewhat of a contradiction regarding the city of Be'er Sheva. And the book of Joshua talks about the Jewish conquest of the Holy Land, and it details every city and exactly to which tribe belonged to each city. And in Joshua 15:28, it says that the city of Be'er Sheva belongs to Yehuda. And in Joshua 19:2, it says that the city of Be'er Sheva belongs to Shimon. Right? So that's somewhat of a contradiction. Now, if you understand that there's two different Be'er Shevas, that one Be'er Sheva is in Yehuda, one Be'er Sheva is in Shimon, and no problem. Right? You could make that argument. But the truth is that it's not such a strong argument. Because we've mentioned a few days ago, there's a story of, you know, Shimon and Levi, the two sons of Yaakov, you know, destroying the city of Shechem, devastating the city of Shechem, right? And so Yaakov, you know, on his deathbed, he gives blessings to all of his sons, except to Shimon and Levi. He doesn't give them a blessing, he actually curses them. But he doesn't curse them, he curses their anger. He says, "Orur apam ki az ve'rosam ki kashasa." Woe unto their anger. Their anger should be cursed. And he says, "What's their punishment? Achalkem bi Yaakov va'afitzem bi Israel. I will divide them in Jacob. I will scatter them amongst in Israel." What does that mean? It means that the tribes of Levi and the tribe of Shimon did not receive a continuous portion of territory in the Holy Land. If you have here, this is an art scroll map of the territory of the 12 tribes, right? There's no territory of Levi. Rather, what happened was that Levi received random cities that were all over the Holy Land. It's scattered all over the Holy Land. The same is true of the tribe of Shimon. These horizontal lines is the tribal territory of Yehuda. Shimon sort of had random cities scattered within the tribal territory of Yehuda. So Shimon's cities are within the greater territory of Yehuda. So that already answers up the contradiction in Joshua. Joshua in one place says that the city of Be'er Sheva belonged to Yehuda, and Joshua in another place says that the city of Be'er Sheva belonged to Shimon. Well, you could say that yes, the city technically may belong to, but it was within the district, county, territory, whatever you want to call it, of the tribe of Yehuda. That city that belonged to Shimon was in the greater area of what belonged to Yehuda. So you don't really have proof from that contradiction to say that there were two cities named Be'er Sheva. Right, so that's the first approach. The first approach of why is it called Be'er Sheva? Is it because of Avram or because of Yitzchak? So we said the first approach is because there are two Be'er Shevas. Right? And we discussed the merits and the drawbacks to that approach. The second approach is that when Avimelech sent, I don't know if he sent it, but people acting in Avimelech's name, his men went and they stuffed up the wells that Avram Avinu had dug. So in doing that, what they were trying to do is they were trying to erase Avram Avinu's influence in that region. That's what they were trying to do. And you can understand, based on that, you can understand that part of that effort was they would get rid of the name of the city, Be'er Sheva. Avraham Avinu named this place Be'er Sheva because he made a deal with Avimelech, so they're trying to get rid of that name, and they've named it something else, or they made people forget about that name, and it fell into disuse. Then came along Yitzchak, and Yitzchak says, we're renewing this deal, we're making a new deal, so we're going to call it Be'er Sheva, the same way that my father called it Be'er Sheva, and now that's why it's called Be'er Sheva. Right? So the question is, why is it called Be'er Sheva? Because of Avram or because of Yitzchak? And the answer is because of both. Originally because of Avram, then they forgot it. They tried to erase it. They had a concerted effort to erase the name Be'er Sheva. And then Yitzchak, when he made his deal with them, he brought back the old name of Be'er Sheva. And if you look carefully, really, in the wording, you can actually see this alluded to in the wording of the Torah. Because by Avram, it says, by Avram in 21:31, it says, Al Kain Karal Makam Ahu Be'er Sheva. Therefore, he called the place Be'er Sheva. Kisham Nish Be'ushneim. Because there, both of them, it's word. So who called it Be'er Sheva? Avram Avinu. But it says he called it in singular form. He called it that. But nobody else really called it that because the name didn't quite catch on, let's say. There was a concerted effort to sort of suppress what Avraham Avinu was trying to do, and so therefore they didn't want to keep that name. But then when you look in 23:33, when it's talking about Yitzchak, it says, Al Kain Shem Ha'ir Be'er Sheva Ad Yemezeh. Therefore, the name of the city is Be'er Sheva until this day. Right? So the first one was just, he called it that, but the name didn't stick. And the second verse is saying, therefore, that's the name of the city to this day. Right? This is the basic approach taken by a lot of commentators. The Moshe of Zakenim says this. The Drushus Shita Mekubetza says this. The Meshe Chochma says it. Hemek Dover, Ramat Vali, Rav Chaim Kanievsky. A lot of people say this idea. So that's the second approach. The third approach gets a little bit more technical. They want to say that what Avraham Avinu called Be'er Sheva and what Yitzchak called Be'er Sheva, or what they called Be'er Sheva in Avram's time and what they called it in Yitzchak's time, are talking about different, technically different parcels, different pieces of land. Right? One way of saying that Avraham Avinu's time, they only called the area Be'er Sheva, but they didn't call the city Be'er Sheva, and by Yitzchak they called even the city Be'er Sheva. That's what Rabbeinu Chaim Paltiel says. What another approach, Rabbeinu Yosef Bukhar Shor and the Chizkuni say that Avraham Avinu called the name of the area Be'er Sheva, and Yitzchak called the name of the well Be'er Sheva. Another approach is Rav Hirsch and the Pirush Rakeach seem to say this, that Avraham Avinu called that Eshel, whatever that Eshel is, whether it's the tree or it's a hotel, he called that Be'er Sheva, as well as the well that he dug, he called it Be'er Sheva, and Yitzchak called the name of the city that was near it, or around it, he called that Be'er Sheva. So sort of, we're talking about different things. Right? In fact, if you look at, again, I lost page again, but if you look again, it says, by Avraham Avinu, in chapter 21, verse 31, so over there it says, Akin kar la makim hahu Be'er Sheva. Therefore, he called that place Be'er Sheva. And by Yitzchak, in 26:33, it says he called Akin Shem Ha'ir Be'er Sheva. Therefore, the name of the city is Be'er Sheva. So Yitzchak, the innovation of Yitzchak was that the name of the city is going to be Be'er Sheva, and the innovation of Avraham Avinu was that just the place was going to be called Be'er Sheva, but not necessarily the city. That's the third approach. The fourth approach is the Moshe of Zakenim says another idea. The Moshe of Zakenim wants to say that really Avraham Avinu didn't call the city Be'er Sheva at all. Really, the name Be'er Sheva only came to the city in the time of Yitzchak. Why does it say in Genesis 21 that Avraham Avinu called it Be'er Sheva, or that because of Avraham Avinu's promise with Avimelech, it was called Be'er Sheva? So Moshe Zakenim says that was really Moshe Rabbeinu who wrote the five books of Moses. So he was writing Genesis. He's the author of Genesis. So he's writing that sort of after the fact, after the story of Yitzchak, when it got the name Be'er Sheva, so he's sort of retroactively applying it to, that was also the place where Avraham Avinu made his covenant with Avimelech. So again, why is it called Be'er Sheva, according to this? Because of Avraham or because of Yitzchak? Because of Yitzchak. Why does the Bible say it about Avraham? Well, that's just, sort of anachronistically applying a name that came about later to something that happened earlier. That's the Moshe Zakenim's approach. And the fifth approach, and this is a somewhat interesting approach, is the Sforno's approach. The Sforno says, if you look very carefully, in Genesis 21 by Avraham Avinu, it says he called the place Be'er Shova. And in Genesis 26 by Yitzchak, it says that he called it Be'er Sheva. And so this Sforno, who is a 16th century Italian commentator, Rabbi Avadia Sforno, so he writes that originally it was called Be'er Shova by Avraham Avinu, and then Yitzchak came and he called it Be'er Sheva. But he doesn't explain himself, like what's the difference between the two. The Chasam Sofer, Rav Moshe Sofer, was a rabbi in Pressburg in Hungary, who died in 1830. So he writes that that what happened was, he writes the same thing, that it was originally Be'er Shava, and then Yitzchak turned it into Be'er Shava. He says Be'er Shava is because Shom Nish Be'ushneim, they both took an oath there. So therefore it's called Be'er Shava. When we come to Yitzchak, he names it Be'er Sheva because he's naming it after the seven ewes that he used when he was, the seven animals that he gave as part of the present when they were making the deal together. So that's the fifth approach. Okay? So we have five different answers to why is the city called Be'er Sheva. Is it from the time of Avraham Avinu or the time of Yitzchak Avinu? And we have these different approaches. Now, the next time that the city... Yeah, okay, fine. So... what happens is, continuing on with the lifetime of Yitzchak, it appears that Yitzchak, in his old age, also moved from Be'er Sheva back to Hebron. Right? Just like Avraham Avinu, in his old age, lived in Hebron, and he died there, and was then ended up buried in Hebron, so too Yitzchak, in his old age as well, moves from Be'er Sheva to Hebron. So Yitzchak ends up in Hebron, and this is the story where Yitzchak is as an old man, and he thinks that his day of death is approaching, so he gives the blessings to his to Yaakov instead of giving it to Esav. The whole story that we spoke about before, and because of the story, Esav wants to kill Yaakov, so Yaakov runs away. Right, so it seemed that Yaakov is running away from which city? From Hebron, because that's where Yitzchak was living, in the city of Hebron. The problem is that the opening verse of this week's parasha is Vayetze Yaakov Be'er Shava Vayela Charana. Yaakov left Be'er Shava and he went to Haran. Right? So why is he leaving from Be'er Shava? It should be that Yaakov is leaving from Hebron, not from Be'er Shava. And it's interesting, skipping all the way to next week's parasha, when Yaakov comes back to the Holy Land and he reunites with Father Yitzchak, so they reunite in the city of Hebron. So Yitzchak is in Hebron. So why is Yaakov leaving from Be'er Sheva? Where does it say that he's leaving from Be'er Sheva from? So the Medrash tells us that Yaakov left from Hebron. That's true. That's where he was living with his father in Hebron. But before he went to Haran, to Mesopotamia, which is outside of the Holy Land, first he had to stop off in Be'er Sheva. He went to Be'er Sheva to go ask Hashem for permission to leave the Holy Land. We said a few minutes ago that Yitzchak, when there was a famine, Hashem told him, do not leave the Holy Land. And instead he ended up living in Be'er Sheva, right? Yaakov Avinu is sort of following the same trajectory. He's going off to travel, right? So before he leaves the Holy Land, he wants to make sure that it's good with Hashem. So he's going to go to Be'er Sheva to ask permission from Hashem. We also find that later on in his life, when Yaakov Avinu actually does leave the Holy Land and goes to Egypt, so again, on his way to Egypt, he stops off in Be'er Sheva and asks Hashem for permission, and Hashem says, go down to Egypt, I'm going to come with you down to Egypt, and I'll come back up with you to the Holy Land, I'm going to bring the people back up as well. So there is precedent for Yaakov Avinu, there's biblical precedent for Yaakov Avinu going to Be'er Sheva to ask for permission to leave the Holy Land. So that's what it means. Vayetze Yaakov Be'er Sheva, Vayelach Harano. He left from Be'er Sheva because he left from first one from asked Hashem permission in Be'er Sheva to go to Haran, and then he went to Haran. There's another tradition that Rashi in the beginning of this week's parsha brings down. Rashi says that before he went to Haran, so there's like a 14-year discrepancy in the chronology of Yaakov Avinu, and Rashi basically says, based on a Gemara in Maseches Megillah, basically Rashi says that Yaakov had spent 14 years learning Torah in the yeshiva of Shemin Aver, and that's how you fill in the 14-year gap in the chronology of Yaakov Avinu. So Vayetze Yaakov Be'er Sheva means that he went to Be'er Sheva, but it's also an allusion to the fact that he spent these 14 years learning in the yeshiva of Shemin Aver. The Marsha in Maseches Megillah finds an interesting allusion to this in the words Mi Be'er Shava. The Marsha says that the words Mi Be'er Shava, if you rearrange the letters in the words Mi Be'er Shava, you can get the words Shem, Aver, Aleph Beis. Right? Mi Be'er Shava. So Shem is Shin Mem. So you have the Shin from Shava, the Mem from Mi Be'er Shava. Ayin Beis Reish is Aver. So you have the Ayin at the end of Shava, Beis in the middle, the Reish at the end of Mi Be'er. Then Aleph Beis, you have from the word Mi Be'er, you have Aleph Beis. So Shem, Aver, Aleph Beis. Like that's the Aleph Beis. That was what he was learning Torah, the Aleph Beis. And he studied there for 14 years. Or you could say that the word Mi Be'er Shava, well, technically Shem wasn't really alive at this point. So it was really the yeshiva of Aver. It's called the yeshiva of Shem of Aver because they were the ones that founded it, but Shem wasn't alive, it was just Aver. So if you take the word Mi Be'er Shava, you get the word Aver, for sure, and you get Arba Asar, which is 14. So it's an allusion to the fact that Yaakov Avinu was spent 14 years there. So that's Yaakov Avinu in the city of Be'er Shava. And again, I mentioned the next time that the city of Be'er Shava is mentioned is that when Yaakov Avinu is finally going down from the Holy Land to go to Egypt, when Yosef was sold and he became the viceroy and he's going to sustain the whole family because there's a famine. So Yaakov Avinu goes and stops off in Be'er Shava. And as I mentioned, Hashem tells him, don't worry, I'm going to go down to Egypt with you and I'll come back up with you as well. And the Medrash tells us that when Yaakov Avinu went down to Be'er Shava at that point in time before he went to Mitzrayim, one of the things that he did in Be'er Shava was that he cut down the tree that or the trees that Avram Avinu had planted in Be'er Shava, and he brought the wood from those trees with him to Egypt. And the wood from those trees are known as shittim wood, and those were the wood that was going to be used later on for making the tabernacle, the Mishkan, when the Jews would be traveling in the desert. So that's those trees that Avraham Avinu, we said, you know, a few minutes ago, we said that Avraham Avinu planted an eshel, which some commentaries say is a tree. So Yitzhak went and he took the wood from that tree and brought it with him to Egypt. And the Jewish people used the wood from that tree to make the wood from the Mishkan, the walls from the Mishkan, and especially what's called the Bria HaTichon of the Mishkan. And the Mishkan was made up of a bunch of gold-plated boards that were like this, vertical boards, and they were held together by poles. They were horizontal poles, right? But the problem is that the horizontal poles only did one side. There's one, you know, each pole held up one side of a bunch of gold-plated wooden planks, right? So what held up the entire structure? There's supposed to be three walls. One side was completely open, but the other one, than that, there were three walls. So what held the three walls together? So there were the way the poles were, there were two poles. There was a pole towards the top of the planks, and there was a pole towards the bottom of the planks. And then there was the pole in the middle. That's called the Bria HaTichon, the middle pole. And that middle pole was from the wood of the trees that Avraham Avinu had planted, according to this Medrash. And what it did was it sort of bent like this, and then bent again like that, and it was one piece that bent this way and this way, and so it held all three walls together. So the poles just held each wall on its own together, and the middle pole held all three walls together. That's the Bria HaTichon, B'Serech HaKroshim, Mavriach Min HaKotze El HaKotze. It went from one side to the other side. That's the verse in Exodus describing these poles. The next time, okay, we mentioned that Be'er Shava appears in the book of Joshua when it's talking about the Jewish conquest of the Holy Land, and we said earlier that there was a contradiction between whether the city of Be'er Shava belonged to the tribe of Yehuda or belonged to the tribe of Shimon, and we already discussed that. There's another place where the city of Be'er Shava appears, and that is in the book of Amos. Amos is one of the 12 minor prophets. Who said they're minor prophets, right? We'll call it the book of 12 prophets. And the book of the 12 prophets has a bunch of prophecies, and one of those prophets is known as Amos. And Amos is the main part of Amos is that he's castigating the kingdom of Israel. We're going hundreds of years later into history. And the kingdom of Israel had worshipped Hashem in a deviant way at two golden calves that were erected by their first king, Yerovam ben Nevat. One was all the way in the northern city of Dan, and one was in the southern part of the territory of the kingdom of Israel, known as Beis El. So there were two golden calves that people in the kingdom of Israel were worshipping. And so Amos, one of the main things that the prophet Amos did was that he castigated the kingdom of Israel for worshipping Hashem at these two somewhat idolatrous cultic sites. And Amos tells us that there was a third site that they added in a place called Gilgal, which was significant because that was the place that the tabernacle was first erected when the Jewish people came to the Holy Land in the first years of Joshua's leadership. And then Amos says another interesting thing. And this is in Amos. He talks about this in chapter 5, verse 5, but he also talks about it in chapter 8, verse 14. Amos castigates the people who are Hanishbaim Ba'ashma Shomron, those who swear by the idol of Shomron, by the life of your God Don, V'chei Derech Beersheva, and by the life of Beersheva, V'naflu V'lo Yakumu Oid. And they will fall and they will not come back up. So Amos is prophesizing that those people who worship God in a deviant way at Don and at Derech Beersheva, they will fall and they won't come back up. So what does it mean, Derech Beersheva? So according to the consensus of commentators, this means that they also erected an idolatrous site in the city of Beersheba, which is somewhat difficult to understand because the city of Beersheba is not under the dominion of the kingdom of Israel. It's in the kingdom of Yehuda, at least the way we understand where Beersheba is. But that's what some commentators say. Now, Rashi says an interesting thing. Rashi says no, it's not talking about that there was an Avodah Zarah or an idolatrous site in Beersheba. Rashi says that what it means is that the people, because it doesn't say Beersheba, it says Derech Beersheba, the way of Beersheba. We could say that the way of Beersheba means the idolatrous way of that cult that they establish in Beersheba, if they establish such a thing. But Rashi doesn't say that. Rashi says that there was this road that if you passed Beersheba on this road, people from the northern kingdom that passed Beersheba on this road, they were obviously only going to Beis El and not going to not going to worship Hashem in Yerushalayim. So I don't know what that means. What does that mean? Let's look at the map. There's some sort of road that if you pass Beersheba on this road, that means that you people from the northern kingdom must be going to worship Hashem at Beis El in a deviant way instead of going worshiping Hashem in Jerusalem in the proper legitimate way. So that doesn't make any sense because Beersheba is south of Jerusalem. So why is it that if I pass Beersheba, that means that all of a sudden I must be going to Beis El and not Yerushalayim? So the whole Rashi doesn't make any sense if you understand that Beersheba is over here. Some commentators wanted to argue that this passage of Rashi is proof again, more proof to the opinion that there were two Beershevas. So it must be that there's like some sort of Beersheba like in between over here, something like that. Otherwise, what?
Maybe he flew.
Yeah, maybe he flew, and maybe he was Superman, and maybe if my grandmother had roller skates, she could be a motorcycle. Maybe yeah, maybe no.
Why grandmother? Why not you?
Because my fourth grade Rebbe used to say the expression, if my grandmother had roller skates, she could be a motorcycle.
No.
So I'm just repeating after him. I'm just quoting him.
My fourth grade Rebbe said, if my grandmother had wheels, she would be a bus.
Okay. So each person has their tradition of how to use that expression. The last place that Beersheba, of course, comes up is that after the kingdom of Yehuda is devastated by the Babylonians and the Jewish people go into exile, so they come back after 7 years of exile under the leadership of Ezra and Nehemiah, and the people came back and they rebuilt the second Beis HaMikdash, the second Holy Temple, and at that time they rebuilt the city of Beersheba. So this is brought in Nehemiah, the book of Nehemiah, chapter 11, verse 27, and again in verse 30 over there, so you see that Beersheba was rebuilt. And I believe in World War I there was a famous battle in Beersheba where the Australian army had this great victory over the Turks. Something like that. Anything else about Beersheba? I feel like I'm missing something, but I'm looking at my notes. It seems like I said everything. All right, thank you for coming. Thank you for staying.
Wow.